Welcome to Healthy by Choice, a broadcast designed to bring powerful healing into your life today. Gaining and maintaining optimum health is possible at any age. That's what thousands are learning at CHIP, the Complete Health Improvement Program offered across the country and around the world. You can learn more at chiphealth.com. But now, get ready to enjoy some proven results and priceless benefits. I'm your Healthy by Choice host, Charles Mills. Let's say that you're overweight and you know that those excess pounds can be damaging to your health. So you pack your bags and travel to Santa Rosa, California, where you check into the world-famous Dr. McDougall's Health and Medical Center. Your goal is to lose the weight and gain some much-needed stamina and vibrancy while rebuilding your body's ability to fight disease. Good for you. You sit down at the center's dinner table, surrounded by dozens of other people with the same goal in mind, ready to enjoy a delicious whole food plant-based meal. That's when you notice something unusual. Right there on the table, within easy reach, are small containers of salt and sugar. Salt and sugar? Aren't they the enemies of good health? Our guest today is the gentleman who allows such a scenario to play out in the lives of thousands each and every year. Dr. John McDougall, welcome to Healthy by Choice.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that's exactly what I do, as I get them to like the food.
But these are the enemy. You're fighting obesity. You're fighting heart disease. You have other dangerous medical conditions you're fighting. Why are you putting the enemy within easy reach of your patients?
Well, because I want to win the war. I don't want to win each individual battle. I want to win the war. In other words, I want people to get their health back permanently. And to do that, I have to make the food taste good. Mm-hmm. And to make the food taste really good, I mean highly competitive to anything else that anybody's ever tasted, I have to add the ingredients that industry uses to entice people to eat their food. Industry is very smart. They've spent decades, if not centuries, I'm sure centuries, they've spent centuries trying to figure out how to make the food taste irresistible to the customer. Mm-hmm. And what they've discovered is that sugar and salt are the two ingredients that attract people so much, and that's because we're basically designed as sugar and salt seekers. Mm-hmm. I mean, stop for a minute and remember the tip of the tongue. The tip of the tongue tastes with pleasure. Salt and sugar. That wasn't a mistake. We're designed as organisms that are destined to go out and find as much salt and sugar as we can possibly find, to a point. I'll qualify that particular statement in a minute. But we're designed as salt and sugar seekers. That's what makes the food taste especially good. I mean, you can get used to the basic food of rice and beans and corn and potatoes. But I mean, if you really want to up it a notch, that's been referred to as the bliss point, where it's upped so many notches that it's irresistible. And if you up it one more notch, it becomes resistible. Mm. Like, for example, sugar. You can eat a certain amount of sugar, and then what happens after that particular amount, it's not pleasurable anymore. Too much sugar is really a kind of a turnoff. But up to that point, it becomes more and more and more attractive because you're getting in what the body's looking for in the in terms of sugar, carbohydrate, you're getting in calories. That's the same thing with salt, except for salt has a very easily adjustable bliss point. In other words, if you learn a low-salt diet, then just a little bit of salt really makes you feel good. If you're used to a high-salt diet, then it takes a lot of salt to get you to that pleasure point. And really, if you eat too much salt based upon your current adjustment, it doesn't taste good. I mean, you can overpower yourself with both salt and sugar. But up to that point, it really makes the food very, very attractive. And my bottom line to get people well is to get them to eat the food. I've got to get them to eat the food. And the food is a diet based on starch, like rice, corn, potatoes, beans, peas, lentils, starches. These are high-sugar foods where their sugars are all tied up in the form of complex sugars. Mm-hmm. So it isn't quite as intensely sweet as is, say, pure sugars like table sugar. Mm-hmm. But that's what people need to eat. They need to eat mostly starch, and to make the starch even more irresistible, I add a little salt and sugar to the surface of the food so they get maximum taste and minimal amount of negative aspects of these two very concentrated ingredients.
Now, you made a reference to bliss point. Apparently, you have read Michael Moss's book, Salt, Sugar, and Fat.
I don't know whether he was original in that particular term or not, bliss point. I think industry's been using that for a long time. Yeah. But Michael Moss's book is a definite read book. Mm-hmm. And it is a phenomenal book. It takes you up to the point of understanding how industry has manipulated the foods to make them irresistible. And, you know, I can relate to that. We have our grandkids with us right now, and they had some friends over a few weeks ago, and they brought into the house some chocolate chip cookies. And I have to tell you, I walked by and I said, well, you know, just a little bite would be okay. So I tore myself off about a 50-cent size piece, and I took a bite, and I thought to myself, I have to have another one. That was so delicious. I mean, so intense, the flavors. And I could see how those chocolate chip cookies, it wouldn't just be a 50-cent size piece of cookie. I could have eaten the whole container of them. Industry has worked hard to make these foods irresistible. Michael Moss talked about that, how they've manipulated with hundreds of millions of dollars and thousands of scientists. They manipulated the food so that the customer just cannot resist taking the next bite. Well, that's the great part about Michael Moss's book, is he takes you up to that understanding and relates it to the efforts of, say, other businesses like the tobacco industry to get people hooked on their products. Yes. The problem with the Michael Moss book is he has no solution. He has no way of solving the problem. In other words, he tells you the problem, that is, the food is made irresistible to salt, sugar, and fat, but he doesn't tell you how to solve it. And the way you solve it, you can't solve it by just taking meat and dairy and junk that they're serving you from the food industry. You just can't take and solve it by reducing the salt and sugar and fat in it, because it's still junk. It's yes. still the wrong food. Meat's still the wrong food, whether it's low salt, high salt. Dairy's still the wrong food if it's low salt, or high sugar or low sugar. You can't make it the right food. What you have to do to fix the problem is you have to change the center of the diet. This is what Moss missed. Mm-hmm. You have to change to what I call the starch solution. You have to take the garbage out of the food, the refined flours, the meat, the dairy, the oil. You must take that out of the food. That's the source of calories currently in the American's diet. That's all they know. Yeah. Salt, sugar, fat, flours, you know, just junk. That's all meat, dairy. That's all they know. You must replace that source of calories with rice, corn, potatoes, beans, peas, and lentils. Then you get the carbohydrate, the sugar that you're looking for. It's not intense, but it's sure enjoyable. People like potatoes, rice, and corn, and beans. You replace the meat and the dairy and the oil and the other garbage that the typical American eats with a diet of oatmeal for breakfast, waffles and pancakes for breakfast, lunch, dinner. You have bean burritos, bean enchiladas, spaghetti marinara sauce, mushu vegetables and rice, all kinds of things that people love, and to make them just irresistible, to raise that bliss point, like industry has discovered, and of course individual consumers have discovered, I add a little salt and sugar to the top of those dishes over the surface so people taste that and they say, I would eat that. I would eat that over anything else I've ever eaten in the world, and I'd serve it to my best friends and my most loved ones because it tastes so good.
Yes, yes.
And that's the solution that I have taken for 40 years, and which Michael Moss, in his great book, refocused me on. You know, the problem is easy to understand when he explains it, and entertaining when he explains it, but he ends the book with, no way out, Michael Moss, no way out. And you must get the way out, and the way out is to switch to the starch solution. Get rid of the meat and dairy and oil, replace it with rice, corn, potatoes, beans, peas, and lentils, and make it really, really delicious with some fruits and vegetables and an added bit of spice, which people love, salt and sugar. That's it. You can't resist it.
It was chapter 12 in your book, of course, Dr. McDougall, The Starch Solution, that I read about this. And I knew where you were going to go with it as I started reading, because you were saying to us that salt and sugar really is not the problem. It's what salt and sugar is on. It's what salt and sugar is seasoning that is the problem. Right. And I think you just brought that out again.
Yeah, well, let me say it. In one picture that I used to put in some of my articles, it's a picture of a pig. And the subline is, it's not the salt, it's the bacon. In other words, it's not the salt in the pig, you know, making the bacon that's the problem. It's the pig.
Yes, yes.
It's the pig. It's the meat. It's the oil. It's the fat in the meat. It's the contamination in the meat. It's the lack of fiber in the meat. The pig is an unhealthy ingredient. And if you load it with salt so you can tolerate it, which is what they do when they make bacon, you have added the salt, which is a marker for bad food, which is the pig. You see, the same thing with cheese. You can't get people to eat saltless cheese. You know, it's just unpalatable because you add salt to it and they'll eat it. The problem is the mammalian secretions, the milk is the problem.
Yes.
That's what's making people sick. And if you doctor it up with sugar and make it ice cream, or doctor it up with salt and make it cheese, you get sick because of the underlying ingredients. It's just that the sugar and the salt are markers and are blamed for the problem.
Now, when you have someone come to you, Dr. McDougall, and this person has heart disease, there's hypertension going on here, do you keep the salt away from this person?
Not necessarily. The drop in blood pressure with salt restriction is very small.
Mm-hmm.
It's less than 3 millimeters on the top number, which is a systolic number, and less than a half a millimeter on the bottom number, which is the diastolic. So salt-restricted diets, unless you get severely salt-restricted, say less than 500 milligrams, have a minimal impact on the blood pressure. What has the major impact on the blood pressure and the overall health and the weight and the flow of the blood and everything else is to change from meat and dairy, which is saturated fat and cholesterol, to starch, which is healthy carbohydrate. That makes the major impact. When you make that shift, regardless of the salt and sugar, what happens is the person naturally loses weight. The circulation improves within minutes. Then the arteries clean out within time. And the blood pressure drops naturally because you've improved the flow of blood. The effect of salt is irrelevant on the blood pressure, but the effect of salt as to whether or not you're going to eat the basic prescription that I am giving, which is a starch-based diet, is everything. In other words, you get well when you take and you change the focus of your calories from meat, dairy, and oil to rice, corn, beans, peas, and lentils. And if you add some salt and sugar to either one of the two before mentioned meal plans, meat, dairy, and oil, if you add salt and sugar to it, you can get it down.
Yeah.
Well, if you add salt and sugar to rice, corn, beans, and potatoes, not only do you get it down, you love it, and you get healthy.
This is such good news because so many people sit down to a meal and they say, oh, no, this is a healthy meal. This is going to taste awful. But you're now saying, hey, if you need a little salt, sprinkle it on. If you need a little sugar, sprinkle it on. That's good news, Dr. McDougall.
My main dietitian, a guy named Jeff Novick, and I have a great time together. And he is a real slow salt guy. You know, he came from the Pritikin program, and he's a real low salt guy. We argue all the time in class and in front of people and public and so on about whether you should go high salt or higher salt, higher salt or low salt. And the bottom line, when we get all done discussing, he agrees with me, you got to get people to eat the food. You got to get them to eat the food. And I want to tell you something else when it comes to salt. There's a lot of information out there. It's from the Cochrane Collaboration, the Institute of Medicine, and many other, NHANES, many other organizations have come out and said that if you eat a low-salt diet, it's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually unhealthy to eat a low-salt diet. Now, I probably shouldn't go too far in this direction with your audience because I may lose them a little bit because they think I'm getting really off base by saying that eating salt reduces your risk of stroke and heart attack and death when you have heart failure. But that's what these committees have come to. And their conclusion is either low-salt diets don't help or they actually may increase your risk of death. Now, let me explain to you why.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen carefully because this is really important. To eat a low-salt diet, I mean a really low-salt diet, less than 500 milligrams. A typical American eats about 5,000 milligrams, 3,000 to 5,000 milligrams. On our diet, you eat about 1,000 milligrams of sodium. Less than 500 milligrams of sodium. When you get down to those levels, the body has to make adaptations. Because you need salt to stay alive. So the kidneys, they change in their effects as far as absorbing sodium. The adrenal glands, they produce angiotensin and aldosterone, various hormones that, by the way, happen to raise blood pressure. They increase these hormones to conserve salt. The skin shuts down as far as losing salt through perspiration. The result is you make all these adaptations to stay alive on a low-salt diet. Well, some of these adaptations actually may be harmful to the arteries. You are a natural seeker of salt. It is a good thing to eat salt. You get rewarded for eating salt. The taste buds on the tip of your tongue want salt. Why would something be put into your physiology that was harmful? It makes no sense. The problem is industry has discovered these sweet-tasting taste buds and these salt-tasting taste buds on the tip of the tongue, and they've just gone without any reservation to offer you levels that are beyond what you'd ever get in nature.
Yes.
And therefore, they may be unhealthy when you get to those kinds of levels. But naturally, a little bit of sugar is rewarding. A little bit of salt is rewarding. And it may be harmful, particularly when it comes to sodium, to severely restrict sodium. So that's another reason I add a little salt to the diet. It may be healthier.
And you keep saying you add it to the surface. You don't put it in when you're cooking?
Well, you know, I want to make everybody happy. You know, I don't want to get into a position where I may have made a mistake. So one way to easily answer to my early teachings, you see, I was thoroughly brainwashed in this low salt thing, too, being trained as a medical doctor. That's the only thing I learned about diet was you need to eat low-sodium diets. That's all they taught us in medical school about diet. So it was thoroughly ingrained in my brain that a low-sodium diet is very important for good health. And now I discover everything, so it's kind of hard for me to let go of the old teachings. So to make both camps happy, this is the way I do it, is we cook the food very low salt. There's less than 500 milligrams a day of sodium in the food that we cook. And then we put the salt shaker on the table, and if you add a half a teaspoon of salt to the surface of that food, you've just brought your sodium content in your meal up to around, 1,600 milligrams of sodium a day. If you have a massive heart attack, end up in the intensive care unit in your hospital, their low-sodium diet is 2,000 milligrams, which is 400 more than our diet of 1,600 milligrams, which is produced by taking the basic foods and adding a half a teaspoon of salt to the surface. See, so therefore, you get the taste, because you put it on the surface of the food, contacts the tongue. You get enough sodium to answer your physiologic needs, which I just talked to you about. But you don't overdose to a point where it may be problems, which I was taught was the most important thing in the past, which I'm trying to let go of. But I do think you can overdo the salt, too. I really do. I think, you know, there is a point where probably you get up around 15, 20 grams of sodium a day. I think you can maybe get into a point where you can cause some people some problems. Maybe that's why they have certain kinds of strokes in Japan, because of those very, very high salt intakes. Maybe. But in that range where there's great taste, you really love the food by putting a little on the surface of the food, and the range where it's harmful is a big gap. And you could eat in there a half teaspoon of salt on the surface of the food in a day easily and safely. Basically, anybody can do that.
Well, that is very, very good news. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Dr. McDougall, I want to move to another area. You and I were talking about this before the program began. I'm noticing that a lot of people these days are just dropping dead. They're standing there talking to you and they drop dead, or they slump over in the steering wheel of their car. People are just simply dropping. Why is that happening? And we have an idea, and I want Dr. McDougall to share with you his insights into this rather unfortunate scenario that's playing out so often in the news today. And we'll do that on the other side of the break, so everybody stay right where you are.
Well, I was about 50, a little over 50, and I had been obese for about 30 years and weighed about 80 pounds over my wedding day weight. I just, you know, felt tired all the time, didn't have a lot of motivation for doing much of anything. I knew I needed to lose the weight, and I needed a program that I could do easily and for the rest of my life. When I found out about CHIP, I began to apply the principles that were taught. I began to lose weight. The weight just melted off, and within a short time, I was feeling a whole lot better. I was able to fit back into my wedding dress for my 35th wedding anniversary, something I had always dreamed of and didn't think I'd ever be able to do again. And as I was walking one day, I had so much energy that I just felt like bursting into a run, which I hadn't done for many years. On top of that, I was able to play with my grandson in the park, and I wasn't getting sick anymore like I used to. CHIP just gave me my life back, and it's a lifestyle that I can do for the rest of my life.
For more information about CHIP and how it can transform your life, go to chiphealth.com. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills, here with Dr. John McDougall. He is from Dr. McDougall's Health and Medical Center. We were talking about his book, The Starch Solution, and more specifically, one of the chapters, Salt and Sugar, the Scapegoats of the Western Diet. And now we know all about that. We know why he has said that. Now I want to ask you something else, Dr. McDougall. I've noticed that people are just simply dropping dead these days. They may be standing there talking with you, and they drop dead, and they slump over the wheel of their car or their bus or whatever. What is going on? I don't remember this happening with such frequency in the past. What's going on, do you think?
Sounds like you may have had some bad personal experiences.
Yes, unfortunately,
oh,
I have.
Oh, that's too bad. I don't know that it's more common these days than in the past. Remember, I've been in medicine for over 40 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, people are dropping dead. Maybe we're reporting it with more efficiency these days because of our iPhones and network communications. You know, you can hardly drop dead anymore in silence.
Everybody has
to watch it.
Yes.
But I know what is happening in a lot of cases. What happens in a lot of cases is people develop sudden blood clots.
Hmm.
And these blood clots in their arteries, which can be in the brain arteries or the heart arteries or various other vital organs, these blood clots, they form suddenly as a consequence of little pimples popping inside of the arteries.
Hmm.
So you get these little sores, and I'll call them pimples for the rest of our conversation, these little sores or pimples inside the arteries, and one of them bursts like a pimple popping on a teenager's face.
Yeah.
And the inner gunk, the necrotic, semi-liquid, pustular material, comes shooting out of that pimple into the flowing blood and causes the blood to suddenly clot.
Hmm.
And you get a blood clot. And this blood clot, we call it a thrombus in medicine, this blood clot, it blocks off the circulation distal to where the clot forms. And if that circulation went to the heart muscle can develop a serious, because of the injury,
yes,
because of the sudden lack of blood flow to that area of heart muscle could develop an irregularity that we call ventricular fibrillation. And because of that sudden onset, that sudden powerful injury and the ventricular fibrillation that occurs, people die within a matter of a few seconds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that happens a lot. And sometimes this happens in the brain. People have massive strokes and they die suddenly. So the sudden rupture of these pimples, and these pimples form as a consequence of shoveling cholesterol and fat, which is animal foods,
right,
cheese,
right,
beef, chicken, fish, oils too, these vegetable oils, into your mouth and then subsequently damaging your arteries, these sores or pimples form. That's how you get them. They pop. Everything seems well as long as the pimple has its cap on it. As soon as that cap ruptures and the gunk comes flowing out, you get the sudden blood clot, and then that's history.
But Dr. McDougall, we are taking statins, we're taking all of these wonderful medicines and Coumadin and everything. Why are we having problems when we're taking all of these wonderful medicines?
Well, the medicines are kind of a Band-Aid, so to speak. It's like getting pneumonia and taking an aspirin.
Okay.
It cuts down the fever, but you die of an infected lung unless you take an antibiotic, which deals with the problem. It's kind of like clogged up cardiovascular system. You eat all this garbage, what happens is you form plaques in your arteries, which are these big scars and bulges. You form the pimples that I just talked about. You cause the arteries to go into spasm. You cause the blood to sludge and gets, sticky and forms clumps, and the oxygen content goes down. You get all this sludging and blockage of circulation throughout the body. And as a consequence of all the sludging and blocking of the circulation, the blood pressure goes up. People get chest pains, they feel horrible, and what we do is we give medications to, say, make the blood pressure go down, or the blood sugar go down, or the cholesterol go down. But still, the arteries are in trouble. They're all sludged and injured and clogged, and all you've done is made the signs of this blocked-up circulation go away or look better. You treat the signs like with somebody with pneumonia who has a fever. You treat the fever. You just treat the sign of the problem. If somebody's got clogged up artery systems, they have a tremendous amount of peripheral resistance, we call it, because of all the clogging and the spasms and the sludging. What happens is the blood pressure goes up. But lowering the blood pressure with medication doesn't fix the bad circulation. The way to fix the bad circulation is to change the diet. And then with a matter of hours, I'm serious, hours, the spasms are reduced dramatically and the blood circulation increases. The blood cells stop sticking together. And in a matter of days to weeks, what happens is the underlying sickness of the arteries that we call atherosclerosis actually reverses. So what you want to do is you want to fix the problem, which is the sick tissues, not just the symptoms and signs, which are blood pressure and cholesterol and blood sugar and so on. But, hey, treating the signs is where the money's at.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to treat the underlying disease, you have to feed somebody potatoes and oatmeal. Where's the money?
So when we're taking these medicines, and you know, millions of people are doing it, they're taking the statins. When we're taking these medicines, we're basically going down the highway of life and removing all the danger signs, bridge out, falling rock. We're taking all these signs out and then blissfully speeding down that road toward disaster and not even know it.
Yeah, people end up dying at the same time or sooner with a bag full of drugs. That's what current drug therapy is. You walk around the last years of your life carrying a bag full of drugs, and when you die, all your relatives stand by your bedside, and they look at your bag full of drugs, and they say, oh, see, the doctor did everything possible for Henry. Look at all the pills he gave Henry. And the pills could have killed Henry.
Yes.
But, you know, everybody's happy because the patient died with a bag full of drugs. That's basically what's going on. And as a result, look at your friends. I mean, just stop for a minute. You know, if you're at your office or in the car, and just look over at your friend there. What do you see? You see a fat, sick person carrying around a bag full of drugs.
Yeah.
Nothing ever changes.
Yeah.
You go to the doctor, you're just a fat, sick person carrying around a bag full of drugs. And as a result, nothing good happens, and it costs you a ton of money. But you get to keep eating your old garbage. Yeah, you get to do that, and you get to be deluded into thinking everything's well because you check your blood pressure and it's lower. You check your cholesterol and it's lower, but your tissues are still very sick. Your arteries are still ready to collapse. You know, that's a false sense of security, but it's a financially rewarded sense of security. This is not a conspiracy. This is just business, like in the car business or the clothing business or the real estate business. These are just men and women that are trying to make a living selling their products. In this case, we're talking about statin drugs to lower cholesterol. That's what the drugs do. They don't, well, except in a small subcategory of people. In the vast majority of people, particularly healthy people, they don't reduce the risk of death. Diabetic pills actually increase the risk of death in diabetics. So does insulin in type 2 diabetics. You know, we know that these drugs don't work, but the men and women in these businesses are just doing their job. They're just doing business.
My. Well, now we have been informed. The book is called The Starch Solution by Dr. John McDougall. And Dr. McDougall, you have a website for us that people can visit?
Yeah, we have a great website. Hundreds of articles about the things that I've been talking about, all free. And it has about 400 or 500 recipes, all free. And that website, you'll be surprised. We just have an opportunity to give a tremendous amount away to people. And it is drmcdougall.com, which is www.drmcdougall.com, drmcdougall.com.
All right, very good. And you have that live-in program there in Santa Rosa if people want to get real serious about this thing. And you're going to find salt and sugar on the table there because he wants you to enjoy the food. Right, Dr. McDougall?
I want you to eat the food.
All right, very good.
I don't care about every little battle. I just want you to live long and healthy and look good.
Amen. Very, very good.
That's... I just want to make you pure. You know, you don't have to be pure. You just have to make it through the troubles.
Also, more information, of course, at the chiphealth.com website. That's chiphealth.com. Lots of good resources out there. There's no reason for us to be sick in this world when these kinds of resources are available to us. Dr. McDougall, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. John McDougall inviting you to be healthy by choice. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about Healthy by Choice, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651. You can also email us through our website at 3abn.org.